welcome back to the Witchology podcast. We are here again this week with episode number 4. Very exciting. My guest this week and the book review are perfectly entwined as they are the same person. The interview is with Julia Helena Haydas, and I will be reviewing her second cocktail book, Moon, Magic and Mixology. So let's start with a summary and then get into the review.
Honour and harness the power of the moon with the celestially infused spirits in Moon, Magic, Mixology. For centuries, alcohol has been used to celebrate the magic of the moon and its phases. Now, with these 70 lunar-inspired recipes, you'll amplify your lunar rituals, enhance your practice, and manifest cosmic energies like never before. Whatever your lunar desire, strengthen and celebrate your connection to the moon with Moon, Magic, Mixology. So I have both of Julia's cocktail books, Moon Magic Mixology and Witchcraft Cocktails. And I love them both, but Moon Magic Mixology has, it's like that next level up is how I would describe it. It's sort of where you could use the first book to kind of start dabbling in cocktail making as sort of potions and introducing that into your practice. But Moon Magic Mixology kind of invites you to explore that on a deeper level, if that makes sense. So it kind of goes through ancient magic, the moon and alcohol, and our relationship with the moon are kind of intertwined, and how that relationship has developed over centuries, essentially. So the whole of chapter one is just kind of going through all of that to kind of contextualize and set the tone, and kind of really properly introduce you to this sort of practice. Chapter two then goes into specific types of alcohol, you know, spirits and wine and beer, and what they are, what they bring to cocktails, what, you know, relationships you can have with them, and some more sort of fundamental things about making cocktails, you know, so like what kind of glasses to use, what kind of methods to use, you know, for like different shaking and stirring and pouring and things like that. So I found that it was really helpful for getting me I guess just to understand how to make cocktails properly, rather than just kind of flinging everything in a glass like I usually do, or just not even bothering and saying, oh yeah, I'm gonna make this kind of cocktail, and it's literally just like, I don't know, all I ever make is Aperol Spritz. So this has invited me to open up my channels a little bit in the cocktail plane. So my favorite thing about the book is, I mean, obviously the detailed recipes, there's so much in there and so elaborate. Like I think when you're kind of planning either a full moon ritual or a ritual for one of the holidays or anything like that, there's so much to it that you can incorporate into kind of like a long-term planning thing. Am I making any sense? So like harvesting the ingredients, like you could grow those in your own garden, you know, you could grow them in your kitchen. You know, there's a whole pre-process of harnessing all of those ingredients as well. Like, you know, you might charge them as well under the full moon, or you might water them with moon water or things like that, you know. And then there's the kind of creating the syrups and all the other kind of ingredients that you can like fully put and put yourself into and ritualize before you've even got to the point of making the drink and enjoying it, you know. So there's so many different elements and aspects to and like sub rituals as a whole, which I really, really like. It's a really exciting way to practice, and I've not kind of fully explored it to its full potential yet, because I'm so last minute. I'm just like, okay, well, I'm gonna try and fling something together. But one of my ambitions one of my intentions for the new year is to definitely put more time into creating and curating rituals like that, and it's definitely gonna start with a witchcraft cocktail. So I would get, and not just because I'm interviewing her as well, I would give this book 5 stars because it's just so informative. It's got really delicious recipes in it. It's full of any other questions that you might have, rather than just kind of giving the recipes, it answers them in the book, you know, and the kind of the whole precursor of contextualizing and the history. Yeah, just win-win-win for me. So yes, love it. Love a witchcraft cocktail book. Julia is also a contributor to the magazine, so every issue has a special cocktail recipe from her in the magazine as well. So if you're not sure whether it's something you want to kind of commit to by buying a whole book so far, then you can kind of try one of the recipes in the magazine and see how you go, you know, and then you might want to get a taste for it, you know, pun intended. But yes, again, 5 stars for me. Good job. Running a small business in today's economic landscape is no mean feat. Even if you love what you do, the constantly shifting social media algorithms can make it tricky for small witchy businesses to get seen by their perfect customers. Photography, product design, bookkeeping, emails, ugh, everything that goes into making your business work is enough without having to worry about SEO, backlinks and advertising as well. We believe in the power and magic of the witch economy, and that's why we created Coven Market, a virtual directory of the best witchy businesses, crafters, artists, tarot readers and shops. It's designed to elevate your platforms and provide you with the backlinks to boost your SEO. Find out more information at witchologymagazine.com/coven-market-subscription. My guest this week is Julia Helena Haydes. Julia is a regular contributor and good friend to us at Witchology. She's the author of 3 books, 2 of which being on the magic of cocktail making. She combines her professions in the witchcraft, healing and alcoholic spirits industries and has quickly become the leading mixologist in the witchcraft and spiritual community. So welcome, Julia. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited. You guys always do such amazing work with Witchology. So I'm so excited just to be here on this podcast.
Amazing. Thank you. It's good to talk to you in person as well, not just over email.
Yeah, like you guys said before, I feel like I know you really well because we're always communicating on Instagram. So it's nice to finally communicate via voice and face to face.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, so Julia is here to talk to us today about cocktail making through the lunar cycle, which is something I am very interested in, hence having bought both of your cocktail books. So let's start with why cocktails? Why cocktails as a practice? Would you say that they, you know, kind of fall under the umbrella of kitchen witchery, or what's your approach to it?
Yeah, so I think it definitely is something that, you know, when I consider what I share with people, it's definitely something that falls more under the kitchen witchery niche of witchcraft. But I also think, you know, in the greater scheme of things, I mean, we've all grown up with the idea of like potions, right? You know, like if you play video games, there's potions, fairy tales, you know, movies, folklore, mythology. And it's kind of interesting because in the modern era, we have really removed the concept of the cocktail as this potion or elixir. Like people kind of just don't really realize that a lot of things that we use in modern mixology, but also with cocktail making, comes from very ancient practices. So it seems a little interesting at first, but then you dive into it more and it really makes a lot more sense. And yeah, it's just so deeply intertwined in ancient witchcraft and spiritual practices.
I'd never thought of it that way, but it makes total sense now that you said it. It's like, oh, actually, yeah, well, I don't know, in my mind, I'd separated them from, you know, other sort of potions or other things, that but they're not. So what are the, so thinking about it being, you know, having its roots in ancient witchcraft and thinking about it as potions, what other kind of historical elements maybe in cocktail making feed through or like fed through this timeline up until you today here with your cocktail witchery?
Yeah, I'm so excited about like talking about this because I've just recently, sorry, it's still early in the morning in the US for me here. I'm on bartending time. So
I've had a whole day already and this is
yeah, I know. Anyway, so there's just so many magical aspects to it too. Now, specifically from a historical standpoint, you know, alcohol was inseparable from early spiritual pagan witchcraft practices. So on one hand, we can think of it logically, right? Anything that has alcohol in it, not like any other, you know, substance, really, it has an impact on us and on our bodies and our mindset. And alcohol in particularly has that ability to alter our consciousness, you know, obviously within moderation. And so a lot of, you know, ancient peoples saw it as a way to communicate with their deities. But when you look at it on an even deeper level than that, alcohol is a result of the harvest. You know, it is a very sacred process of death and transformation. You integrate all of the elements. So, and also for people that aren't as familiar with alcohol, part of that is fermentation. So in order to get alcohol, basically that sugar from fermenting fruit or fermenting whatever is transformed into alcohol by yeast. And so it's this whole process of death and transformation. And then when you get into other aspects of creating alcohol of any kinds, you've got, you know, brewing, which you integrate, you know, heat. So you've got that fire, you have the earth element with all of the ingredients, you have the air, because also in ancient times, like nowadays, people intentionally introduced yeasts into what they create, but like our ancestors didn't have fancy technology to introduce yeast. So yeast was introduced through the air to help that process along, and also the steaming aspect, and water. There has to be moisture for that process as well. And I actually really love this metaphor, because through that process, you've got what those four classical elements there. And, you know, if you think of the pentagram or pentacle with the 5 points, the four classical elements, and the fifth point being spirit, well, you have this fermentation, and what do you get out of it? What we call alcoholic spirits. So on that level, it's so magical. It's a great way to embody the process of transformation and alchemy, which is a big part to me of my personal practice of witchcraft, is transforming my circumstances or my past. But also, you know, all of these different ancient cultures. So ancient Sumeria, we have Ninkasi, which is a beer goddess who not just, you know, they would sing or chant this hymn to her as they were crafting beer, but also she was considered to be in every drop of the beer. So the beer that they would drink to communicate with their different deities, one of them, you know, being a moon god that I talk about in magic mixology. It was all considered to be heavenly or spiritual. And every ancient culture has their own alcoholic substance that is related to their spiritual and ritual practices. And even further on, like when we get into distilled spirits, you know, pot stills or stills, where their roots are from actual, you know, early alchemical practices, right? These were people who were trying to do alchemy, turn lead into gold or whatever, who created these stills. And that's, so all of these things are really sacred. You've got bitters. Bitters are herbal tinctures, you know, that people would use to preserve herbal remedies because they didn't have refrigeration. Same thing with drinking vinegars or shrubs. So every element, and I should say too, like even to bring that into present day, a lot of modern day recipes people don't realize are still actually spiritually connected with intention. So you've got chartreuse, which chartreuse is a recipe that the monks in the French Alps make to this day, you know? So there's all of these things that have these connections to health, healing. You've got aperitifs and digestifs, which are herbal liqueurs that are meant to help with digestion and stimulate appetite. And you've also got further back the spiritual connections and applications of those things. So it's just, it's, you know, and then there's a lot more. I mean, obviously, I've already talked for probably about 10 minutes here on this. So, you know,
it's so yeah. I was enthralled in what you were saying. So
I know it's exciting, but yeah. So it's ingrained, yeah.
Ingrained, is that a pun? Pun intended.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. But you know what? Now that you told me that, I'm gonna have to steal that.
I'm always here for a pun. Oh, no, that's absolutely fascinating. And I never thought of it that way in terms of using it as a method for altering your state of consciousness. And you think more, you know, are you going to like smoking different things to kind of get to that point, or, you know, trying, you know, meditation and to get to that point. But with alcohol, I guess, because again, historically, I don't know, over the last 200 years, I suppose, specifically, I don't know, using alcohol for that reason has a bit of a taboo around it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I wonder what your thoughts are on how, although it's altering your state of consciousness, how can you do so in a mindful way? How can you do it like purposefully and intentionally and maintain what you're seeking to achieve? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I should preface too, like, you know, I am someone who does drink in moderation, and I think part of that is because of my spiritual application of working with this, is I see it as an experience. But also, I love making non-alcoholic versions for people. I think the regardless of whether it has alcohol or not, I feel like sometimes kitchen witchery gets really like stuffed to the side, but the reality is what you ingest, your body breaks down. It integrates into your pot body. And so if you use it with magical intention, it can be a really powerful way to, from the language of a magical energetic perspective, like change your vibration for whatever your intention is. Like if you are doing something with intention, it infuses on every level. And obviously alcohol has the added bonus of it goes into your bloodstream and it impacts you a lot faster. But for I think that part of the reason, and we all have our own journeys with whatever substance. And I think that there's substances across cultures that people use for these same purposes, right? You've got ayahuasca, weed, like, all that stuff. And people use those things for all kinds of purposes, and also spiritual purposes are a root of that. So I don't really consider alcohol any different in that regard. And I do approach it from the spiritual perspective because, I mean, obviously, you've worked with me and seen my blog. I put a lot into every drink, and it's, every ingredient has an intention and a meaning. And because of the impacts that alcohol has, if you use it with intention and with moderation, I mean, a good drink that, like, when you make it with magical intention and aligned ingredients, it really does make you feel differently. Anytime I make drinks for people, they always report, on how different the magical drinks that I create are. And that's because the alcohol that's used, the base ingredients for the alcohol, the ingredients I add are all curated with intention. And it can really put you, and not just intention, corresponding energies in a state of which maybe you, how do you say, it can inspire energy, right? So, like, all of us know, like, you drink a little bit of alcohol, you might feel a little more confident. Certain parts of yourself may come more to the forward that in that moment you cast more empowered magic. It could be just the symbolic act of drinking a potion and ingesting that and feeling your consciousness change even minorly as a result. And also, people like drinking, whether it's alcoholic or not, is a big part of social connection. Any amount of food is. And so, intentionally putting together a beverage for when people come over to drink, like, oh, I'm gonna put some lavender rum honey concoction together to make people a little more harmonious in their communication, to feel more at ease since they're gonna come in and drink anyway. Or even turning it into a full ritual or spell work in which maybe you're doing a sugar jar spell and you've got a matching sugar rim on your lemon drop cocktail with aligned ingredients. There's just so many applications for it, but definitely I think a big part is drinking with that spiritual intention. I think because alcohol has been so removed from its roots, it's just something that on both sides that people either, dismiss or lean into in unhealthy ways. And I think bringing that spiritual intention into it, for one, makes for a damn good drink, but two, you engage in a more conscious relationship rather than just sipping alcohol for more mundane purposes. So it really brings the meaning back into it for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I mean, you kind of touched on it within that, but and people's relationship with alcohol can be somewhat challenging. And separate to deeper conversations about alcoholism, etc., that I'm, for one, certainly not qualified to discuss. How do you think, I mean, with this kind of mindful and intention setting within cocktail making, how do you think that ritual-based cocktail making could affect our relationships with alcohol? I mean, I swear I say this in every episode. Again, on that journey to self-awareness and knowing ourselves, I feel like it could play a big part in that, like knowing your limits eventually, but and knowing what and being able to actually reflect on that relationship that you might have. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So I think drinking with that intention and doing the whole process of creating a ritual drink you know, it, you sip and really enjoy it in a different way. You feel its impacts and you slow down and become more conscious of what's inside, how it's influencing you. Now, obviously, like if someone, people have to be honest with themselves. If they are having trouble with things, there's lots of different tools and techniques. Obviously, I come from the bartending sphere, you know, that you can't, that I would suggest you try to work with balancing alcohol. I'm not saying like witchcraft cocktails is a solution for those problems by any means, you know, because everyone has different reasons for things. Like for me, my scapegoat is sugar. So unfortunately, that is the way that my brain has been wired due to my childhood, you know, and that's something that I actively have to work with and modify. And so anyway, you know, just to clarify, you know, there's, you got to find other ways to work around those things. But I do think that and I have found too, like I said, I'm someone who constantly drinks in moderation. You know, I love making drink recipes and the magic and feeling the energy of them, but I don't make these recipes and have a wild night after that. It's a sacred process and it's a way for me to communicate with the spiritual energies of life, because of, for one, what these kinds of drinks can do, whether or not they have alcohol in them, with the herbal ingredients that influence our bodies, but also just through, you know, the substances that are in there. I mean, alcohol is sacred. When you know of its history, it's, you realize, like vodka, you know, my family's from Poland, okay, so we love vodka. They, you know, voda means water in Polish, and you know, the word for vodka comes from water of life, and vodka is very much intertwined into my family history growing up. You know, it's part of, to some extent, you know, our own cultural practices. And so, you know, people do work with alcohol in spiritual ways that aren't necessarily always conscious. And becoming more conscious of these connections and making an intentional drink is a great way to really connect more and enjoy a cocktail and the magic and the history and the energy of all the ingredients on a deeper level than just simply going to a cocktail bar and slurping down a drink. You like really reflect on it on a deeper level, and you're also having the added layers of corresponding intentions that does make you really savor it in a different way, that you're feeling those, that energy in your body.
Definitely. And having made a few of your recipes, they, I mean, there's a lot to them or a lot to some of them, in a really good way though, like where you need to, or you might need to make a simple syrup or one of your more elaborate syrup recipes are always really enjoyable. I find that having to, because that's a whole step in itself that you do a different time, you know, potentially. I mean, sometimes I make emergency sugar syrup because I want to make a drink, but because I'm like, oh, you know, it's full moon, let's do it. Last minute planning, as always, terrible witch.
Oh no, I think we all do that.
so I yeah, so that going through that process of like setting that time to be like, all right, I'm gonna prepare these kind of sacred ingredients ready for a future event, you know, and start thinking ahead. I think that really invites you into that space of enjoying the cocktail intentionally and setting the intentions with it as well. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, going on like what you said, like there's a million ways that you can make alcoholic or non-alcoholic an aligned drink. You know, it's like when you're talking about simple syrup. I mean, part of this is I'm super comfortable with this is because this is my profession. You know, I've worked in depth, like not just as a professional bartender, right? But I've worked for distilleries, you know, and so really up and close and personal with the distillation process and all. And God, I could talk forever about the magic of a distillation process. Like, oh my God, like we just see the end product, but like there's so much that goes into that that's already magical. And we already use alcohol for things like creating mists, you know, or preserving energetic vibration. So it's really just, it is more natural of a fit than we really realize. But like simple syrup, maybe you don't have a lot of fancy ingredients, but just take your favorite tea. And if you have a tea that you love to use for ritual, and like just add equal amounts of sugar that you put in hot water, and you've got a simple syrup you can add to spruce up any drink that you want. So it's, it can be like Definitely, sometimes it takes a lot more preparation, but there's a lot of ways to modify it to make it as personal as your witchcraft practice can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the simple syrup as well is really good to use in tea. If you're making an iced tea as well, also very nice. So that's a top tip.
Yes.
On that, thinking about ingredients and everything, our editor, Sarah, she's hilarious. But
I love
she gets
that.
I mean I, every quarter whenever I go through the editing, I see her slowly lose her mind, in the best way. As editors do. I just see her sat there with coffee, slowly turning, going mad. But one of the things that always makes me laugh is that she just likes to make jokes all the time. But one of which being about exactly how many things need to go in the recipes. So not just the cocktail recipes, but also all of the like baking and things like that. So
Yes.
how much when it does say something like seven blackberries or four blueberries, how specific is that number? Like how much freedom is there, or do you think? Are they there as a guide and say this is the what tastes good, but lean into what you might feel like as you're going through this ritual of making it, or what?
Yeah, so it's both, and I mean, I am someone who believes on personalizing things to make it work for you. And that is partly because I am from an immigrant family. And so growing up in this kind of other cultural experience in America, being surrounded by that other cultural experience, I just there's and also from having anthropology degrees, we all do things in very different ways. Now, I do believe that there things oftentimes are done a certain way to help provide guidance. So people that are newer, I might suggest just following things the best of your ability a little more strictly so you get comfortable, because if you don't have any experience mixing a drink and you kind of just jump into it, and also the same thing with magic, you know, if you're not really jumping in with information or following the guides of the spell and immediately improvising it, there's just it may not be as effective or work the way that you intended. And if you're going to sip something, I imagine that you do want it to at the least taste good, and not including the fact that you want it to have those magical energies. But that being said, I firmly believe in making things work for us. As someone who, again, professional bartender, people's palates are so different. And there's also regional differences. So, you know, with witchology, I'm not just, you know, speaking to local people. I'm speaking to a wider audience. And so realistically, you know, there could be magic to certain numbers of seven blueberries, but on another level, blueberries in the UK and the US could taste totally different and be totally different sizes. And so there is a lot of room there that, like, you know, first of all, work with what you've got. You know, if blueberry isn't going to happen for you, maybe you can find some alternatives like raspberry or blackberry. I'm honestly not going to sweat it unless those ingredients are in there for a very specific intention. So with the protection potion for witchology, that's specifically blueberry is great for psychic protection, and stuff like that. So those ingredients are intentional in that way, but you do have to work with what you have. And I also do believe in making it work for your flavor preferences. So when I make a drink, because I have the experience of serving to people behind a bar, I do have a medium of what I know is a level that is going to be a balanced cocktail for people. But everyone's different. Some people are more sensitive to sweet flavors, in which case I might start with a little less than the syrup that I add to things and just do a little bit. And you can always add more sweetener. Or if you're someone that likes it sweeter, you can also add more sweetener or whatever. So there's just a lot of things that you can do to make it work for you. Because, like I said, I do think our witchcraft practices are very unique to our individual lives. It's often what draws us to witchcraft in the first place is our own personal life experience. And that's the freedom what I love about witchcraft is not following a very specific religious path. You know, I have the freedom to do what works for me based on my experience and what I have found. So I totally believe in improvising things for your own personal flavor preferences.
Yeah, oh, that's good to know because I'm very much a follow the instructions because I'm not very intuitive when it comes to kitchen things. Like I follow the recipe, that's it, Whereas my husband's very good at kind of I don't know, he can kind of see the flavor profiles on a different level and can kind of like make it work, So I think that I'm very jealous of that. So for me, having those very specific things laid out, I'm like, right, I'm going to do that because I can trust that it's going to turn out All right, and I'm not going to ruin it. But from what you said, I think that helps assuage any anxiety that maybe any of our readers or listeners have, thinking, oh gosh, I ate one of the blueberries earlier, just out of the punnet, and now I've only got five left or whatever.
Honestly, I think
kind of lean into it, and
yeah, I think that's part of the magic. Like, honestly, like, I do not go against, first of all, eating while before you do the recipe, but also, like, I mean, God, a garnish, like, not only is it edible garnish delicious, like having a blueberry to eat, but it also garnishes enchant the nose. They are what greet your aroma experience right before you sip the cocktail. So I do think it's totally valid. When you're talking about eating, I'm like, oh, garnish, you know, it's a very magical opportunity. But there's, yeah, no wrong. And I should say, I am talking from the experience of someone that has professionally made drinks. So maybe I have a much more easier time modifying things than other people. So if you know you have trouble with that, I might just start slowly, you know.
Oh no, I'm just gonna stick to the recipe. That's it. Like, I won't do it unless I've got everything.
Absolutely. So obviously, like, know yourself if you're someone that you think you can, maybe just a little bit of more lemon or lime would help make it more acidic for you, or a little more sweetener. No, but definitely if you have trouble, I suggest jumping in the deep end and straying too far off the recipes quite yet.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you say that about garnish as well, though, jumping back to that. With how, I don't know, it's sort of like, I can't remember the phrase you used. Incites the senses, did you say that? Or like,
yeah, like aroma, you know, it's, it greets the scent that greets, it's like starts your experience of the sip. And we all know, like, every part of life is magical, but scent, it influences our experience of taste and our minds as well. So yeah,
I'll never forget a cosmopolitan, and you think, like, the most simple kind of cocktail that I had in Rome years ago, because part of the garnish was this, like, fennel spray, like, just on the top. It was so nice.
Oh man.
Yeah. It was so good, and I'll never forget it. And I should really work out how to make it, but again, I don't trust myself.
That sounds so cool, though. That's exactly the thing, you know, like, it starts your experience. It does influence the flavor. I mean, my personal favorite of that experience is, did it make it into this book? It might have. I'll have to double check. But a recipe that I created where it uses jasmine and rose in the cocktail, and that floral flavor is really prominent there. But at the same time, I created, like, a little lemon boat, you know, with lemon peel. I call it a boat, but basically you just twist a lemon peel in a way that
so cute. Is that
floats
the
on top of the drink.
Juleps one? Because I'm sure.
No, that's not the julep. The Cancer Moon, jasmine, and rose. So this I did modify for people a little bit with the garnish. But basically, you can see the lemon peel here. So, but you know, if you create this boat properly, it does float, and you put in. So you take the peel, make it a little bit wider, and first of all, the lemon essential oils, oh my god, already an aroma experience. But then you put some dried rose and dried jasmine. I didn't put the jasmine in this recipe, but that was the original intention, and it was such a freaking experience, because the smell of those ingredients and the flavors hit very different levels in the tasting experience and palate, you know, whereas I'd say the smell is more uplifting. Flavors of jasmine and rose are a little more of, like, I don't know how to describe, like, more of a medium and not as of a high note. They're more, they have that earthy herbal flavors. And so it was just like this whole thing of, like, breathing in this uplifting jasmine and rose on this little lemon peel boat in the drink, and then you sip it, and it's just like this whole aromatic experience that you get layers to a drink and the magic of certain ingredients that you don't without such a garnish, you know. So garnishes can just boost the whole level of a concoction.
Yeah, like mega sensory amazingness.
yeah
Oh, sounds so good. So do you have, like, again, thinking about that, it could be garnish, could be ingredient, do you have a favorite herb to use? What finds its way into most of your recipes, or when you're at home and you're kind of improvising and vibing, what herb tends to show up most? Or fruit, anything?
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of things. I should preface that to say that, like, I have a, I don't know, this is a line that I always struggle with towing, because I have to think of multiple things when I create a concoction. Now, on one hand, these are supposed to be magical and special. And I have lots, like one of my thing that I love is like when I put together a recipe book, as someone from a professional, I want to put things that are accessible for anywhere people are on their witchcraft and mixology journeys, but that also includes people that are more advanced. And so one of my prides is the number of bartenders who follow me and have told me they love my book, because I'm like, okay, great. So I've done a great job of appealing to those more advanced people as well. And, you know, helping them integrate that in that way, as well as also to beginners. And so that's always the trouble that I have with a recipe, and especially when it comes to a book. Like, I will say that Moon Magic Mixology definitely goes a little bit more out there with ingredients that people don't usually use, but they definitely are out there. You just have to practice looking for them. And so I have to like find this line of like, okay, what can make this drink special and different, but what can also be something that is approachable. So a lot of the ingredients that I use, it's filtered by the intention, the magical energy of that ingredients, but I also have to think about what group of people that's going to appeal to. So there are recipes that I do that are a little more simplistic for that reason, and there definitely are recipes that I do that are a lot more complicated. So I'm trying to think, like, there's just certain staples like rosemary, rose for sure, lavender bitters. I mean, you can't go wrong with lavender bitters. I'm just going to be upfront about that. I love using just stuff that you can find at most grocery stores, like apple, berries of all kinds, because, you know, that's, I mean, I have to go buy those ingredients to make it. So what I have accessible, spices are a great way. Cardamom, you know, for drinks that are more related to love and Venus energy. You've got cinnamon, and spices never go bad. So those are things that I tend to gravitate towards from an herbal perspective and also from a spice.
Love it. Sounds good. I just realized, though, we haven't talked at all yet about the lunar cycle.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as we're talking. I'm like, oh.
It was just too interesting. I got way too sucked up into everything else. So let's bring in all of this context and the history and everything, and the more sort of general aspects of cocktail making, and then more specific into witchcraft and cocktail making. How do we then embed that into our engagement with and connection to the lunar cycle? So your book Moon Magic and Mixology obviously takes us through that journey, but where would we get started? What would you recommend for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my god, there's like so much I can cover here. So obviously from a more scientific perspective, the moon, people don't know, I'm like a little bit of a nerd when it comes to just certain scientific things, and so one of those things is the moon's gravitational pull upon the earth. It helps balance earth's wobble, so it helps us experience a more smooth experience of the seasons. So it has a role to play beyond. We all know that it influences the tides, and its influences upon the tides and water does influence the life cycles of sea life and ocean life, but it also likely influenced early evolution on Earth, because that would invite the water to move in ways that it would interact with the parts of the Earth that it wouldn't normally. So that movement could very well stimulate things. And we all, like, you know, a lot of us embrace the connection between the moon and water through creating things like moon water and astrologically charged waters. And so on one level, like, to me, I'm like, potion's the most magical way to attune to the moon. You just, you know, it's liquid. And there's so much to me, like, when you think of the moon in astrology, it symbolizes some of those more unconscious parts of ourselves based off of our early childhood. I mean, also we've got the cycles and power and all those magical aspects on the witchcraft side, but also astrology and how we care for ourselves and nurture ourselves emotionally from an astrological perspective. And to me, a glass is the perfect container, because a glass is a symbol of what you choose to bring into your life and hold and contain. And then you imbibe that for your own personal cup. And you see it in the tarot with the, you know, cup soup, you know. So there's all of those other magical perspectives that there's just such a natural alignment between having a drink of any kind with the moon, but also early practices. You know, the moon is a big part of harvest of any kind, and how people experience time. And so the harvest cycles, and then the harvest being celebrated through alcohol, because that is where that process comes from. It's just already naturally intertwined. There's wineries still today that harvest, you know, their grapes based off of lunar cycles. So it is also entwined on that other level. And ancient peoples did also do those practices. So I think I mentioned in the book, you know, they have in ancient Sumeria, the moon deity. God, obviously, I don't know how to pronounce these things. So, and I'm also like someone that reads stuff and is not great pronouncing it. So forgive me, anyone, for anything that I mispronounce in this episode. But there's like the moon god Nanna, who's one of the more supreme deities within these practices. And they would drink alcohol as a way to commune with this god. There are ancient seals from Sumeria depicting the sacred act of drinking beer, which again, we've talked about in Ninkasi already, but it was a way to connect to it. And part of that is the moon is intimately connected with harvest. When you get to ancient Hindu mythology, we have Soma, which I also talk about in the book, which is a specific elixir with that would have had fermented lotus or other things. They still, you know, have to figure out anthropology, you know, archaeology, figuring out specifically what ingredients were in that. But that was a specific fermented beverage that they would use to connect to their moon deity. And there was, you know, some evolution. All of mythology changes over time because these cultures expand thousands of years. So I believe that, you know, Soma started off being a separate thing, and then became associated with their moon deity, Chandra. So I talk about that in a book at a much deeper level. That so, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you touched on it with the, like astrologically, the moon inherently just brings about that introspection, and then connecting the dots with the cocktail making rituals and connecting with the self and that introspection. They kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah. And even like you think of like moonshine, right? And like the whole moonshine, moonlighter stuff comes from people would make these stuff under the light of the moon. And when you think of the impact that the moon can also astrologically have, that, you know, we in good and bad ways, sometimes depending on what astrological energy is happening, accessing the subconscious or the parts of ourselves that are stored away, which alcohol can definitely bring out. So there's just so many layers. It's the same thing, like everything in moderation, and same thing in the way that you work with certain astrological energies and what the moon can really represent and bring out, as I'm sure most of us have seen with the recent lunar eclipse, you know? So
yeah, absolutely. So if there was a moon cocktail cheat sheet of like just the four main events, or even just the two main events, if we just say new moon, full moon, where can our listeners get started with it? What would you say? Okay, if you didn't need to know anything else, know this and know this.
Yeah, and that's actually a great question, and that did remind me of what I was trying to say earlier. So on one level, you know, that's also when you're drinking with the moon. And like one thing I really tried to do in this book, I don't know how much you have read through it, but I put astrological information.
There's a lot of detail in there.
Yes. And also I try to talk about the various moon phases too, from various perspectives, because people have a lot of different practices when it comes to working with the moon. Like there's very different definitions of what the dark moon is or the new moon in certain witchcraft practices versus astrological. And so I try and dive into all those things. People have the knowledge there that they can choose from what works best for them. And part of in making those moon mixes is utilizing ingredients that have certain astrological energies and associations related to the sign that the moon is in. So that's another layer to that. Now for getting started, I did put a reference in the back of the book for different herbs for, let me see. I don't think I broke it down by moon phase, unfortunately, but I do have actually drinks specifically in the book for the moon phase. So, and so part of that is, you know, on the waning phase of the moon is when we might want to drink more purification related drinks. So I have a lunar purification potion at the front, you know, and so that's like grapefruit, rosemary, champagne. And I just like love talking about the magical properties of alcohol. So champagne is one of those things that is bubbly, you know, so it has that layer to it. But white wine usually has the grape skins removed in the creation process. And so I see that as the removal of the physical body and the spiritual. So when you take a sparkling wine that has that the bubbly element in those ingredients, to me, it's a spiritual, so for also with New Year's coming up, you know, there's another excuse to have champagne. You know, and then I have a drink, a white mulled wine recipe towards the end that's specifically for the waning moon. It's got those comforting energies. We have lunar alchemy for kind of like that dark moon phase, for transformation and stuff like that. So it's kind of, you know, using different ingredients for maybe what sign the moon is in, but also the energy of what that moon phase is. So are we in a period of manifestation? And so I put recipes in there that people can use to kind of guide, you know, they could even use, they don't have to like use this for drinks. If you just want to look at what specific recipe I put together for a certain lunar phase, you could totally just use those in your own spell work, you know, because those are ingredients that are aligned for that specific energy of that phase. So yeah, I hope that does answer your question.
It did. Thank you very much. Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank you. This has been so fascinating. And I mean, I've read your books, but still having this talk with you
You.
has been really good to delve deeper into those areas. Super fascinating. I have a very unrelated question now.
Yeah.
And that is, if there were going to be a Witchcraft Cocktails movie, who would play you in that movie?
Oh my God. You know, honestly, I don't know. So here's the thing that completely, again, unrelated. I am an Aquarius rising. And so to me, how that manifests is I am not someone that likes labels. So like when people put me in a box, you know, and that's the thing is like I like being able to connect with multiple people. I am a Leo sun, so I'm very honest and authentic, but at the same time, you know, we act different in different situations. So I'm like trying to think of like that I would have to understand what I come off as publicly for that. Like I think I seem very high energy publicly, but like honestly, like I'm a hermit at home. You know, I think a lot of us public witches probably feel that way, you know. And so like the one thing that I think about, and I don't really know if this is someone that would like play me like character wise, but I don't know if you've ever seen The Witches of East End. Jenna, I forget, I know that she was married to Channing Tatum and they're no longer married, so I forget what her last name is, but she played this bartender witch who did potions, and so that's like immediately in my mind. I'm like, you know, and I dyed my hair black, so I'm like, you know, that's a just from that previous role of her
Yeah, if she
playing
did it
a
once, she could do it
bartender
again.
witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
that's, you know, that's, but other than that, I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm gonna have to look up who that is because I can't actually remember her full name, but
I know
I think
Jenna, yeah, but
something.
anyway.
Well, thank you so much again for being here and having this chat with me and with us this evening slash
Yeah.
morning, nearly lunchtime for
Well,
you.
thank
Oh
you
no,
so much
lunchtime
for
exactly
having
now.
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you're right. I know that time change. It's funny because my time doesn't change, but my orientation to everyone else's time does change. For those listening, I live in a part or in Arizona where we don't do the time change. So
It's no daylight savings for you.
I'm yeah, so it's just been like kind of weird this last 2 weeks trying to like figure out what everyone else's time difference to me is now. But
Yeah.
yeah.
So enjoy your day. Thank you very much for spending this time with us. It's been so fascinating, so interesting. It's definitely caused me to be, I don't know, just to add those more, that bit further into my inquiring mind while I'm drinking and eating. So thank you for that. And I hope that our listeners can take that away forward into their days with them too. I think.
Awesome. And thank you so much for having me. I always love working with you guys at Witchology. Like you're my favorite people. First of all, you all have such radiant energy, you know, authentic, and the work that you do is amazing, supporting people in the community.
Thank
So thank
you.
you so much for having me. I am a huge fan of every single one of you.
Oh, that's so sweet of you to say. We are a bit of, if you couldn't tell, we are obviously massive fans of you as well. So that's good. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
So thank you very much for tuning in again today. It has been an absolute pleasure. If you like this episode, you can enjoy it ad-free by becoming a Witchology subscriber. Not only do you get access to this podcast and lots of bonus episodes, you will also get a print subscription to our magazine, as well as cauldrons full of additional content on our exclusive members area on the website. Head to witchologymagazine.com/subscriptions to find out more. Until next time, goodbye.